Hello, everyone. Welcome to the SmackDown summary this week. It's me. It's Sandra. I'm here with David J. McCutcheon. Hello, David.
Oh, I was going to do my Kenny impression.
Oh, I'm here with Kenny McIntosh today.
Hello, I'm Kenny McIntosh. how is everyone doing?
I don't know if that's supposed to be Kenny, like, drowning underwater, or...
It's kind of like Kenny if he got transformed into a puppet and was also a chef in Sweden.
Yes, yes, accurate.
Yeah.
Accurate yeah. description.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, don't be suing me, Muppets. I didn't say Swedish chef.
No, he just said a puppet that happened to be a chef in Sweden. It could be called something completely different.
Get off my ass, Muppets, all right? I'm already getting sued by the WWE for MMW. I don't need your shit, too.
Hey, so you changed Minnie down. Vader to Vator with a T. I think that should absolutely absolve you of any legal ramifications.
That to me, that's cut and dry. And to my lawyer, who I found on the television, he also says so. So I don't know what they want out of me, but apparently all of my money. And the joke's on them, too. I mean... If I'm paying everybody in corn dogs that have been sitting out for 2 days, what do you think I'm making at the gate? About right? $20, if anything. Especially now that Minnie Vader ended up exposing himself before the last MMW Revival event and ended up canceling the whole thing. Because I was still on the hook for the venue cost, you guys. And we didn't have a single person enter the carnival tent. So how about that?
The trials and tribulations of promoting midget wrestling.
Yeah, yeah.
The year of our Lord 2017.
I know a lot of you guys look up to me and aspire to do what I do for a living.
I mean, most of the midgets do.
But let me tell you, everybody, don't get into the promotion of a midget wrestling event. It's just going to break your heart in the long run. And it's not going to be, you're going to be eating the stale corn dogs right next to your talent. So,
and I know we have so many listeners who were planning on getting into the midget mud wrestling promotion business. So I'm glad that you're here to offer such sage advice to our listeners so that they don't follow in your footsteps.
I think Alan would. I think he may. But rest Fair assured, enough. Alan, back away from it, buddy. I'm taking this bullet for both of us.
I'm sure he appreciates it. But this week's SmackDown was live from Des Moines, Iowa. So not really a crowd that I would necessarily expect to be super exciting. And they didn't really get a very exciting show, David.
Yeah, I can't shit on this crowd because, I mean, you know, you can only judge a crowd based on what they give you, right? Like if they give you something amazing and the crowd's just sitting on their hands, then it's like, hey, that's a bad crowd. And I don't feel like there was any one segment that truly knocked it out of the park on this show. So I think it just kind of felt like the whole thing was a stinker.
It just kind of felt like it was, I don't think it was quite as bad as last week. I think that it was slightly better than last week's episode of SmackDown Live, but it definitely wasn't great. It was just kind of a show that was there. I mean, it seemed promising when we opened with Shinsuke Nakamura, and we opened with Shinsuke's music, and Renee Young's in the ring, and she introduces Shinsuke Nakamura, and you get to hear his entrance, and he does his entrance, and he's really cool, and he's Shinsuke, and he's great, right? We love
this
Shinsuke
Nakamura. This was the highlight of the entire show, him coming out.
Yeah. It was all downhill from there. But Shinsuke Nakamura came out, and everyone wanted to hear what Shinsuke Nakamura had to say, right? Renee Young was going to interview him, and who shows up to ruin everything but Dolph Ziggler? Because, of course, what else does Dolph Ziggler ever do but just ruin everything and be terrible?
I was really excited for this. They hyped it up. And I was like, man, no matter what happens on the show, at least Shinsuke is going to have an opportunity to, like, introduce himself and cut a promo and this and that.
Which he can do.
Yeah, he definitely can do. I think something that holds him back is having the mouthpiece in. Because his English isn't perfect. And then you give him something to put into his mouth.
It really doesn't help in terms of clarity of speech.
Right. So that was his hindrance here, besides, you know, being... Essentially, what they did was they put concrete boots on Shinsuke Nakamura and chucked him into a river and told him to swim.
Basically. I mean, I think he still swam okay. considering.
Yeah, hey, he was doggy paddling like a motherfucker.
He really was. I mean, Dolph Ziggler comes out, and what did Dolph Ziggler even say? He comes out and he was like, oh yeah, nobody can understand you because you speak Japanese, as Shinsuke was trying to say something in English. And I don't say trying to say something, like, he was speaking in English. Everyone can understand him. So Dolph Ziggler just came out to just, I don't know, be mad racist to him and be like, oh yeah, no one can understand you because you're not
Dolph Ziggler did have one fan in the crowd who was also very racist and kept screaming what at everything that Shinsuke said, even though you could perfectly understand what he was saying.
Well, I mean, I couldn't understand what he was saying when he did speak Japanese. And
the Japanese part I understand, but like even before that, this guy, the one guy in attendance was screaming.
Yeah, there was someone who really thought the what chants were a very good idea. And
oh yeah.
You know, I hate to break it to you, crowd, in 2017. What chants aren't a good idea?
Oh,
they're terrible. They ruin things. It's so annoying.
I will say Steve Austin with the what chants, hilarious. I love Steve Austin's what chants. Steve Austin isn't around anymore, you guys.
He's not. He's not been around since 2003 when I graduated high school. So
yeah, it's been a while.
A good while since Steve Austin's been around. And I get
it. We're old as shit, you guys.
We really are. And the thing is, like, I don't like the what chants all that much. Kind of ever, because they're frustrating. But if it's a heel and it's a heel who you're supposed to hate and they're really egging you on to do the what chants, like, sometimes I get why people would what Stephanie McMahon, for instance.
Yeah, sure.
Nobody likes Stephanie McMahon. Stephanie McMahon is actually pretty decent at dealing with the what chants herself, but I get why you would want to what someone like Stephanie McMahon, because you're like, no, I want you to shut up because I hate you because you're a deplorable human being, right?
Whatting Shinsuke Nakamura? Stephanie. So yeah. I will take a little bit of a bow. She deserves it.
But Shinsuke Nakamura is not someone who deserves it. Shinsuke Nakamura is someone who should be treated like a fucking star because he's a star and he's one of the most interesting acquisitions to SmackDown since WrestleMania. He wasn't technically part of the Superstar Shakeup because he debuted two nights after WrestleMania. But it frustrated me that Dolph Ziggler came out and then he was saying something like, you know, oh yeah, what you don't know is he's really just this guy who grew up in Gary, Indiana called Michael. And then Shinsuke's like, what the fuck are you on about, dude? And he basically goes on to describe Michael Jackson. So did Dolph Ziggler think that calling Shinsuke Nakamura Michael Jackson was an insult? I mean, Shinsuke Nakamura has cited Michael Jackson as an inspiration to his character and someone that he admires in terms of being an entertainer. So what even is Dolph Ziggler's... Is this Dolph Ziggler's comedy routine?
Oh, God. You know, if I were Shinsuke, I would have just went off the cuff and been like, oh, yeah, my name is Michael, and I guess your name is Sean, huh?
That would have been great, actually.
You know, I don't understand this. It was just racist and stupid. And I don't know, Michael Jackson, say what you want to about his personal life, Michael Jackson was a bad motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
He was pretty great. The biggest pop star of all time. Really incredibly talented. One of the most influential musicians in the history of music. So I don't know. I think there's worse things to call him.
Which is why I didn't understand why it was meant to be so insulting. And I like that Shinsuke, I mean, fair play to Shinsuke Nakamura. He does grab the mic eventually and say, you know, like, oh, in case you didn't understand. And then he says something in Japanese. I would love to know what he said. I don't know what he said. I haven't really gone in to look and see what he says. But
I can read Japanese, but I can't speak it yet.
At the end, it was very clear that he went, jackass. And there was a big pop for it. Because, yeah, Dolph Ziggler is a jackass. And I would like to see Shinsuke Nakamura just kick Dolph Ziggler's face off. Please and thank you. Like, that would be amazing, in my opinion. Ziggler sort of ran away from Nakamura, and Nakamura stood tall, and, you know, that was all, it was fine, but it felt kind of flat as an introduction for Shinsuke Nakamura to SmackDown.
You know why it felt flat?
Huh.
Because it shouldn't have been Dolph Ziggler to begin with. It should have been The Miz. It should have been The Miz.
Fair
damn
point.
Damn it. It should have been The Miz. The Miz actually had steam, unlike Dolph Ziggler, so it would have given Shinsuke more of a rub, and people love to hate The Miz. Therefore, it, instead of just hating to hate Dolph Ziggler, it would have made it that much more fun for the crowd, who are actively engaged in disliking The Miz, as opposed to passively hating Dolph Ziggler.
I think hating to hate Dolph Ziggler is an excellent way of putting it. Because, yeah, I do hate Dolph Ziggler. I really do. I want him to go away. But I don't enjoy seeing him on my television. And this segment just sort of clinched out why. Like, Dolph Ziggler is good at speaking, but what he says is pish.
Yep. It's really terrible. And he's just so safe. And he colors in the borders. As to where a guy like Nakamura wouldn't even grab the coloring book. He would grab a blank piece of paper and create something all his own. And that's the difference between these two performers. And I don't want to see someone, the artist, Shinsuke Nakamura, or whatever
what
the fuck
even?
They're calling him.
What even are they doing calling Shinsuke Nakamura the artist when they have the artiste Aiden English on the very same show? I take offense to this on Aiden English's behalf. Thank you very much.
It's obviously a play on the Prince thing, the artist formerly known as Prince.
Didn't even cross my mind. That's how bad that link is, because you telling me that right now is the first time that has occurred to me.
Yeah, that's where they're getting at it, because of the fact that Shinsuke is kind of like overtly sexual and a little, I won't say androgynous because that's not the word. I'm blanking on the exact verbiage, but he's basically someone who people find sexuality in. Regardless if you're a man or a woman, there's some sort of primal attraction. Even if it's not inherently sexual, it could be linked that way. And Prince is the next best example. So I understand the link between the two of them. Somebody clearly saw that and said, he's a little bit like Prince, you know? And hey, I completely understand that. They're both over-sexualized icons of their industry. I get it. But A, if you're going to do the Prince thing, embrace it fully. Don't come out and call him Michael Jackson on the same week.
And also, if you're going to do the Prince thing, then Patrick Clark's going to need something else to do. He's going to need a new experience.
Great point. I didn't even think of that. So there you go. Yeah.
Some of us still watch NXT. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And I have no idea what the fuck I'm going to see at the house show on Friday at NXT, because half the damn roster is staying in Florida. So,
honestly, if recent television is anything to go by, you're probably in for a pretty good show.
I don't know who's actually going to be there for you, though. I'm just hoping that Bobby Roode's there to defend the title.
Is he advertised?
Otherwise, no one's advertised.
Oh.
You know who was advertised? Shinsuke Nakamura and The Revival. That's who's advertised.
Well, yeah, that's probably not going to happen then.
So, yeah. In conclusion on the Shinsuke thing, which I think is the most interesting part of SmackDown, this was a bad segment to debut him in, but it wasn't a bad segment overall. I thought that his facial expressions were great in the way that he was reacting to what Dolph Ziggler was trying to say.
Nakamura reacting to Dolph Ziggler was how we all react to Dolph Ziggler. Like, what the fuck are you on about?
They needed to have Nakamura completely lay him out, though. There's no reason to have them build towards the two of them touching, which is going to end up being a backlash. It's going to be Dolph Ziggler versus Shinsuke.
And to be fair, it's going to be a good match. You know, we saw the match.
It'll be fine. It'll be fine. The match is fine, but it goes on way too long. This is a match that should be over in 3 minutes to establish Shinsuke as a player. And instead, it's going to be 10 to 15 minutes, and it's going to be back and forth. And it does not need to be back and forth. Shinsuke needs to come out, beat the jobber's ass, and move on.
I would like that. I mean, personally. The thing is, I mean, they're going to have a good wrestling. That's the problem with Dolph Ziggler, is that he is a good wrestler. He is good in matches, but he is such a terrible character. And everything he says is just so incredibly disingenuous that I can't take him seriously, and I just want him to go away.
You know something that I've heard a lot, and I'm going to make this link now because I won't remember it later. A lot of people tell me, how can you like Bray Wyatt so much whenever he's not very good in the ring? He's not a good wrestler, is what they tell me. And I say, touche, if that's the way that you see it, that's perfectly fine. But in the WWE, we have the greatest wrestlers in the world, right? Mm-hmm. You've got AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura on the same fucking program, right?
Yes.
You have guys who can work their asses off, like Neville, who just toiled for the longest time before he actually found his ground.
One of the best wrestlers they have employed. And not because of just flying and flippy stuff. Like, in terms of technical wrestling, he's one of the best they have employed.
Yeah. You know who else are really great wrestlers?
Who?
Kalisto.
Yeah.
And Dolph Ziggler. And TJ Perkins. And all these other guys that we just don't care about. The fact of the matter is, being a great wrestler sucks. It's overrated now. It was great in the days of Dean Malenko and Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho and Perry Saturn. It was great whenever those guys defected from WCW and came over to the WWF. And we went, wow, they're actually going to have a chance instead of being held down by guys who can't wrestle. Well, guys, grow the fuck up. It's not 1999 anymore. We don't need every wrestler on the planet to be a great wrestler. You know who else wasn't a great wrestler four or 5 years into his big league career?
Psycho Sid.
Mark Calloway. There you go, Psycho Sid. The Undertaker. He wasn't that great either. And you know what? He eventually got great. You know what they couldn't teach somebody, though? You know what you can't teach a Perry Saturn? You know what you can't teach a Dolph Ziggler? How to have a charismatic, magnetic presence. You can't teach that. And you can't teach that.
Oh, don't remind me of Enzo and Cass. This is supposed to be my happy show. Unfortunately, SmackDown didn't do that very well this week. But after Shinsuke Nakamura and Dolph Ziggler, we did have AJ Styles versus Baron Corbin, which I thought was a fine match. It wasn't a great match. It was fine. I kind of like seeing the two of them together. And I like that Corbin is getting to work with great wrestlers who also exude personality, because that makes the story a lot more interesting. I'm not super sure what AJ and Baron Corbin are settling, because it seems to be that they're settling the issue of, we had a match and I didn't win and I want to win one. And that's their issue. Like, that's Baron Corbin's issue with AJ Styles. Can you think of another issue that they're settling? Because they're like, this rivalry has gotten very personal. Like, has it, though?
Controversial opinion. Baron Corbin had the worst match with AJ Styles that AJ Styles has had in the WWE. I thought that both of their matches were very average, which for AJ Styles is unacceptable.
Yeah.
AJ Styles could get up there and wear the broom or a blow-up doll or a 10-year-old girl and put on a 4-star match. So, I mean, hell, he put on a clinic with Shane at WrestleMania.
He did.
So if he can do that with non-wrestlers, there's no excuse why Baron Corbin can't elevate his game to meet that of AJ Styles.
And I feel like Baron Corbin has had better or at least more interesting matches with people other than AJ Styles, which doesn't make sense. Like, maybe the two of them just don't have very good chemistry.
Maybe, but I mean, it's kind of inexcusable if a guy is that good as AJ Styles is. But I mean, even like the Shinsuke Nakamura matches that he had with Samoa Joe, they didn't necessarily mesh. So
yeah,
I mean,
they weren't great
workers can get in there and have subpar matches, but at the same time, man, this is your time to shine. The difference between Shinsuke and Samoa Joe, which is way better than Baron Corbin and AJ Styles, by the way. There is no comparison there. But the difference between those two guys is they're already established talents, right?
Mm-hmm.
As to where with Baron Corbin, this is his time to make a name for himself. And if he can't do it in the ring with AJ Styles, then who can he go out there and throw on a 5-star match with? You know what I'm saying?
I mean, so, I don't know if a 5-star match is really in Baron Corbin's wheelhouse at this point. But even like course, a 3.5, 4-star match, I mean, maybe we'll see with Sami Zayn. I mean, what happened after the match was, you know, Kevin Owens comes and tries to distract AJ Styles, and AJ like kicks him away or whatever, and AJ actually rolls up Baron Corbin and wins the match. And then Kevin Owens attacks, and Baron Corbin and Kevin Owens kind of team up to attack AJ Styles after the match. And who should come out to make the save? The guy who apparently is aligning with AJ Styles now, just for, you know, in terms of the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of a situation. The guy who won't leave Kevin Owens alone, the guy who's always at Kevin Owens' heels, Sami Zayn runs out. And I got pretty excited. I'm looking forward to Baron Corbin versus Sami Zayn, actually. I think that's kind of an interesting story and follows with Baron Corbin's whole, I don't know, his whole personality of I'm the big guy. I'm the one that they called. I didn't have to toil on the indies. He looks down on indie guys, you know. And Sami says later in the show, too, or I think on Talking Smack, he was like, you know, I knew Baron Corbin in NXT and he wasn't likable then and he's not likable now. And I think that there's an interesting story to be told. Oh, I think that's absolutely a shoot. I wouldn't doubt that whatsoever. And I'm curious to see if Baron Corbin and Sami Zayn can maybe have better chemistry than AJ Styles and Baron Corbin. And maybe it's just because this was kind of a throwaway match on a throwaway SmackDown, just like last week's match was a throwaway match on a throwaway SmackDown, where it didn't really matter. So, normally AJ still has good matches in these situations, but really, ultimately, this wasn't about anything other than setting up Kevin Owens versus AJ Styles. So, because Kevin Owens was on commentary for the match, talking about being the face of America and talking about how he's the best United States champion of all time, yada, 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 standard fare, right? And Kevin Owens is great on commentary, but it's the exact same stuff as everybody says about being United States champion, especially if they're not from here. And so it's basically about furthering AJ Styles and Kevin Owens and then setting up Baron Corbin versus Sami Zayn, which I assume we're probably going to get at Backlash as well. It seems like that's where we're headed.
I would imagine so. And I think that it gives Sami a good program, and it will elevate Baron Corbin because he'll actually be able to come out of a program on top, because that's obviously what Sammy's being groomed for, is to put over Baron Corbin here.
Mm-hmm.
But the one last thing about AJ Styles and Corbin, it was 2 weeks in a row they had matches and they weren't for anything, which leads me to believe that they were for Baron Corbin to get over. And I think he failed on that front.
Yeah,
and as JR... As JR says, you got to maximize your minutes, kid.
Yeah, and he didn't necessarily do that here. So it's interesting because with all the talk that I've seen online about how, you know, I think Dave Meltzer reported in The Observer that they're actually higher on Baron Corbin than they are on Braun Strowman, which absolutely baffles me, right?
Because that's just so stupid.
I don't understand it, because I've come around to Baron Corbin. When Baron Corbin first debuted in NXT, I thought he was the most boring of all the boring people, right? Like Baron Corbin was terrible.
To be fair, I mean, that's what he was.
He just came out and had a blank look on his face, and like, yeah, his music and his entrance were cool, but there was one girl I knew, she was like, Baron Corbin's entrance is wasted on Baron Corbin because nobody cares. He looks like he's waiting for public transportation. Like, it just, he doesn't matter. And I think Baron Corbin has come a long way. And I think dickhead Baron Corbin has worked in stories in the past. Like, I kind of like dickhead Baron Corbin just murdering Kalisto. I kind of like dickhead Baron Corbin, you know, going through a bunch of the indie guys in NXT and having that be his story. But Baron Corbin versus Austin Aries wasn't that exciting. Baron Corbin versus AJ Styles wasn't that good. And I've been high on Baron Corbin in terms of, like, I really like his deep six. I really love the End of Days. I think he can do all right in the ring, but I don't think he's great yet. And I think maybe working with people like AJ and Sami Zayn will help him get there. I hope it does.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you would really hope so. But I just think of how many people would be killing themselves to get that spot against AJ Styles 2 weeks in a row on national television, you know? Yeah. And he didn't really seize the day, we'll put it that way.
No, he really didn't. And I mean, it just, you can't help really, I guess, compare Baron Corbin to Braun Strowman. I mean, Sami Zayn even did it on Talking Smack. He said that this situation reminds him of what he went through with Braun Strowman on Monday Night Raw. And if one has taken advantage of it, I can tell you who I think has taken more advantage of it and come out looking like more like a star. And that'd be my Braun.
Oh, yeah. No, that guy... Over everyone is over the moon for Braun Strowman. I have people who I know who are the epitome of smart mark. If the guy can't put on a 5-star match, then they hate him. You know, the anti Bray Wyatt crowd. And even he is just bonkers for Braun Strowman.
Braun Strowman had two great matches with The Big Show. And I love The Big Show. Don't get me wrong. But Braun Strowman had two great matches with The Big Show. And Baron Corbin had two okay matches with AJ Styles.
Ooh, man. Whenever you put it like that.
It's kind of a thing to think about, though, right?
It really is. To think about. It really is. Oh, my God.
But after we got all that, Dasha Fuentes is backstage with Charlotte Flair, who talks not like a human, but talks about dominating Raw and how she needs a new kingdom, basically. She said she was a four-time Raw Women's Champion, and she needs a new kingdom. And now, you know, she doesn't want the SmackDown Women's Championship. She needs it to exist.
Yeah.
Because that's how Charlotte Flair talks, and it's so frustrating.
It's not frustrating at all. You are completely wrong on this. I've had my mentions get lit up today.
I know, as have I. I know we've been fighting about this.
Yes. Yeah. No. It's if everyone talked the same and sounded the same and cut the same promo, then it would be boring, and they would all kind of blend in. So we should be thankful that Charlotte is cutting a spoiled brat queen promo.
No, I like cutting a spoiled brat queen promo, but what I don't like is just her cadence and her enunciation. I think Charlotte's great, and I think she's a good promo. I'm not saying that I think she's terrible or anything. I'm just saying that I prefer that people actually sound like humans when they cut these promos. Like, when Alexa Bliss talks, she cuts a great spoiled brat promo, and yeah, it's different to Charlotte, but it's she actually sounds like a person. And when Charlotte talks, it's funny because Mr. Sandra was watching as I was watching this promo, and he goes, but the SmackDown Women's Championship does exist.
It doesn't exist to her until she has it.
No, but is Charlotte trying to say she needs the belt to exist? Like, she needs that title to be in existence, or she needs it for herself to exist? Like, she needs it inherently.
She needs it for itself in order to lift the title up. Is how I viewed it. Like, the title was nothing, but it will be something once she has it.
Okay,
is how I viewed it.
I took it as she was trying to say that she needs it, like, for her sense of being inherently. She's like, I need it. But did she saying that it needs her? I think the fact that it's unclear is a problem.
I don't really think it is a problem, though. I think that everyone's going to forget about it once she inevitably wins.
I mean, that is definitely going to happen at some point. We don't know when exactly, but we know that she's on the way to winning the SmackDown Women's Championship.
But you are correct. She doesn't talk like a person. She talks like royalty, Sandra.
I don't even think royalty talks like that.
I don't know. Have you interviewed the queen?
No,
I haven't,
to be fair. I have not interviewed the queen, so you do have me there.
Pinky's up!
I don't know. There's just something about her cadence that bugs me. And maybe it's supposed to bug me.
People
good! Pointed that out
to.
I
She's
know that
heel.
It's supposed to bug me, but yes. I don't know. It's very cringy to me.
It's literally the same way that I feel about The Miz and his cadence.
No. The Miz's cadence is way more smooth. Like, Charlotte still feels like she's reading lines to me. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just a personal preference thing, but she still feels like she's reading lines to me. I think she delivers it. I think she...
If she cut the same promo as Alexa Bliss, then there would be no differences between their characters.
No, I'm not saying they should have the same delivery. I'm saying deliver it like a person is what I would prefer.
I just disagree with you on it.
Which
we'll
is
just
fine.
We'll have to agree to disagree.
And we can do that. That's absolutely
fine. Let us know who's right, though, you guys. Tweet us. Let us know.
But, I mean, what I do like is I like Charlotte's point of the promo. I don't want to lose that. I like the fact that she was like, I conquered Raw. I did everything there was to do on Raw. I was the champion four times. I beat everyone. Now I want to beat everyone here. I need a new kingdom. And, you know, she said she's going to prove to Naomi and everyone else what they already know. She's the greatest WWE superstar in history.
I love it. So good.
So, I mean, and I like the fact they're obviously being told to say over and over and over that Charlotte is the greatest acquisition in the superstar shakeup.
Oh, God, it's all they fucking talk about.
It's all they talk about. And that's kind of frustrating. But I like the fact that she's the one that they're saying is the greatest acquisition in the superstar shakeup. Because honestly, she kind of is.
No, she totally is. And it's great because she is a woman and we can legitimately say that.
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't want to just sweep that under the rug, how cool it is that. And also, I mean, the women main event this show, and it just kind of felt like, of course they would. Why wouldn't they? It's for the title.
Yep.
So absolutely. I like that we've gotten there. Something I don't like, David.
What's that?
How do you feel about beat the clock challenges?
Fuck the beat the clock challenge. I'm going to beat the piss out of the beat the clock challenge, Sandra. Do you want to know why the beat the clock challenge is stupid?
Oh, I have some ideas, but regale me.
The reason is, no matter who wins first, they always lose. The time that they put up always gets beaten later in the night. I can't recall off the top of my head, and I'm sure it's happened, but in the time that I've been watching, which the beat the clock challenge is a newer thing. That wasn't around whenever I was a kid. And you know why it wasn't around?
Is that why everyone loves the Attitude Era so much? No beat the clock challenges?
It's fucking stupid. It makes your talents look like shit whenever they both lose in 5 minutes. And I know that people usually do lose in 5 minutes, but you're showcasing that they can't win in 5 minutes and they get their asses handed to them in that short amount of time.
Also, what happens in a beat the clock challenge, you are just advertising to your audience, your viewing audience, these matches are not going to be good. They are not going to last for a long time. They are not going to be good. Also, as a talent, as a wrestler, shouldn't you always be trying to win a match in the shortest amount of time possible?
Yeah, I mean, that would be the idea.
Isn't
the ideal
point of matches
scenario?
Winning? And why wouldn't you want to do that quicker? It's not like you're paid by the hour.
Yeah.
You're paid by the win.
You're preaching to the choir here, and it advertises to your audience, hey, this is all fake, and whatever team wins right now, you don't got to worry about them ever winning again, because the teams that go on later, one of those two teams is actually going to be the winner.
I think one time it happened that the team who won first won the Beat the Clock, or won second, but there were more matches. Also, this was a show with the Beat the Clock challenge with just two matches.
Yeah, like, what the fuck?
It seems like there should be more than that, but the tag team division is so shallow that we can't do more than that because there aren't more tag teams. I mean, they could have put the Sings in there, I guess, but then you'd be making them lose a match or what. I don't know. Like, the whole Beat the Clock challenge thing is just frustrating. And I thought it was funny that we had a Beat the Clock challenge. Like, within the past month, I think we put up on Patreon the special that Robert and Kenny did for the old ITR VIP on the worst, like, shit gimmick matches.
Yeah.
The first one they mention on that special is the Beat the Clock Challenge, and they go on about how much Kenny and Robert hate the Beat the Clock Challenge. So I was like, oh, well, at least Kenny gets to miss out on talking about a Beat the Clock Challenge, because, oh, yeah, for fuck's sake. And the first match
was a bad
one,
too.
And it was a bad one, too. Like, we'll talk about the eventual result in a little bit. I have very conflicted feelings about that. But the first match is American Alpha versus the Colognes again. The Colognes are so boring, David.
And it's 50-50 booking, so you know that the Colognes have to lose after they won last week.
At least when they were selling timeshares, they were doing something.
Yeah, they would come out smiling. They were essentially the Puerto Rican version of Apollo Crews, with timeshares.
Yep, but they had timeshares, though.
They did.
That was the thing they had.
Now they're just coming out.
They have no timeshares. They have nothing. They're just the Colognes. They're just guys. They're just guys wrestling. And I know we were talking to Pranjal Dungana last week, said that he disagrees with me because I've said I want to see American Alpha do better and I want to see them featured more and I want to see them more in the spotlight because I love American Alpha so much. I fell in love with them in NXT. I fell in love with Chad Gable the first time I ever saw him have a match, right? I know I say that all the time, but it's true. Like, that's how charismatic
he was. I also did, but it has more to do with his looks because I overly sexualize my wrestler, Sandra.
Well, I mean, I don't know if that's a bad thing.
He's a handsome man, is all I'm
saying. Chad Gable is a handsome man. Jason Jordan is a beautiful specimen of a human as well. But, I mean, American Alpha, I think they're great. I think that SmackDown booking has hurt American Alpha more than it's hurt anybody else except maybe Apollo Crews and Kalisto, right? Because
I think that they've hurt them just as bad, even though they were given titles. They were not really...
They weren't given time to defend them, and they weren't given time to have matches to really showcase their charisma. They haven't even really been given any backstage things. The only backstage promo time they've had, they've just been like, yeah, we're really fired up to be here and we're really excited to win. I mean, anybody can say they're really fired up to be here and they're really excited to win. That's all Apollo Crews said, too. They've basically presented American Alpha, one of the most charismatic tag teams that I've seen in ages, like from what I've seen of them in NXT, and one of the best tag teams at wrestling. And I know we just had the discussion, like, being great wrestlers isn't enough nowadays. And I think people who only watch the main roster and who never saw any of their stuff in NXT just see them as another example of they're great wrestlers, so what? Like, that doesn't matter. They're boring. They're dull. They don't have any charisma. And I think that's such a travesty because they can show charisma in the ring like nobody's business if they're given time and given a proper story to actually sink their teeth into. I mean, all their backstage segments when they were coming together as a tag team, when Jason Jordan, you know, was being stalked essentially by Chad Gable in NXT, when Gable was like, here, hold my towel with my name on it because we can be friends, right? And Jason Jordan was like, no, I don't want to partner with you. You're gross. And so he partnered with all sorts of people that were way worse than Chad Gable, and it made no sense. It was an interesting story to build them coming together as a team, and it showed off their personalities and it worked. And they've been given none of that on SmackDown, and it makes me so upset. And then we get a beat the clock challenge where they face the Colognes and win in 5 minutes and 17 seconds, and it means nothing.
Absolutely nothing. And I think one of the reasons that they've been billed so terribly is the fact that Vince historically does not like Olympic wrestler types. And I think the reason he warmed up to Kurt Angle so much is the fact that Kurt Angle had just such a great personality, and he was so willing to make fun of himself and everything that it just, he's a very endearing person. As to where, I don't know if they're going to allow American Alpha to showcase themselves in that light. I don't see that happening. I almost wanted those guys to get brought over to Raw just so they could get a fresh start.
I agree with you. And I would hate to see them leave in the terms of I like to be able to talk about American Alpha, but I don't like every week having to come on here and be like, I'm so sad that American Alpha still look like nothing.
If I were booking that, I would have had Sheamus and Cesaro go to SmackDown and American Alpha go to Raw.
It probably would have been a better situation, to be honest.
It would have. It would have. It definitely would have. And plus, I mean, imagine the matches that the Hardys and American Alpha could have had.
Would have been killer. Would have been absolutely killer. I would have loved it. And it would have given American Alpha a chance to show just how good they can be. Beat the Clock Challenge is not that place. It's not at all. And it's not even going to matter because there's another match later on. And like you said, the first one to win a match in a Beat the Clock Challenge, probably not going to be the overall winners. So it was, you know, and you know, the eventual Breezango winning was the one thing that was spoiled for me. So I knew even more that this just doesn't matter. Like, I was glad the Colognes didn't win, but I knew that it just didn't matter. We got a little bit of a vignette for the New Day coming to SmackDown soon. I'm curious how long they're going to keep the New Day out. Are they going to keep them out for the entirety of Kofi Kingston's injury?
I think so, yeah. Kind of, they needed a reset, I think. Mm-hmm. So keeping them off TV, probably the best situation, I would say. And then, hey, whenever they come back, they'll be fresh, and maybe they will rejuvenate the tag scene.
I hope so. I really, really hope so. I mean, the tag scene, as we saw in this episode, it really needs something. So a couple more teams, and I think keeping the New Day off television so that they don't get stale is a good idea. So I can see why they're doing it, but at the same time, I really feel like the tag division needs more teams that actually matter. So, I don't know. Like, I guess we'll just kind of see where that goes. And we also heard from our dear darling, Alexander Rusev, who is demanding a championship match at Money in the Bank, or he's going to just go home to Bulgaria.
Money in the Bank, which Mr. David J. McCutcheon will be on hard cam for, you mean?
Yeah, that very pay-per-view. I'm so jealous.
I'm very excited. I am going all the way pro Rusev. It really bums me out that they've split him and Lana up. I think that that's a horrible mistake because they're just a great package together.
They are, but I feel like Lana's incredibly stale right now. I like Lana joining the women's division.
I don't know where one ends and the other begins, though, and that's going to be a really tough reset to do for the fans. to go, hey, this is an entirely different person now. And we're just going to go, no, that's Lana. That's Rusev's wife.
I don't think
it's... Now she dances and does hip-hop dances.
Before, too. I don't think it's necessarily that big a departure, and I don't think it's going to be, like, they're not together.
If she drops the accent and she's doing hip-hop dances, it's a huge departure.
Is she dropping the accent? That's the question.
I don't know, but, I mean, she's coming out in a different get-up, and she's doing... She's basically doing Billy Blank's dances, so, I mean, hell...
She's basically doing what Summer Rae used to do with Fandango, except Lana can actually dance.
Right, but I'm saying, man, that's a big departure from coming out in her dress suit and all that fun stuff and the very stoic heelism that she always presented. I don't know, man, that's a big departure for me.
I don't know, maybe it's just because I watch Total Divas, like, Lana is the most irritating human alive. On Total Divas, she is so terrible. Oh my gosh, she is needy. She is whiny. I wouldn't even want to hang out with Lana. She just
I love her because she liked one of my tweets.
Well, that's always nice. I'm glad that she liked one of your tweets.
Yeah. No. She's a saint. She liked one of my tweets.
Have they acknowledged on television that Alexander Rusev is injured?
Because
they didn't make any mention of it here.
I don't think they have, no.
That just seems weird to me.
Or like, maybe they did it, like, in passing, but it's not been a story or a focal point.
Right. Because it seems weird that I get that they want to still have him in our consciousness, I guess. Because I don't know how long Kofi Kingston's going to be out, and I don't know how long Rusev's going to be out. Rusev's going to be out at least for a couple months. But it seems kind of weird that they would have him on camera challenging for, you know, like, demanding a championship match at Money in the Bank, which isn't until July.
Yeah.
And he's,
man, I'm hoping that happens, though. That'd be great.
Oh, I think that would be great. Yeah. I mean, if that could lead to whoever's United States champion versus Rusev, if it's either AJ Styles or Kevin Owens, I'm not sad about that.
I don't care who it is, I just want to see some Rusev.
Yes. I miss him. I really miss him. And I'm excited to see him when he returns. It just seems really early to be giving a video like this. Like, I demand this at Money in the Bank in July when it's April.
I'm perfectly fine with it if it's something that they actually keep up and have a back and forth every week until then.
I hope it builds. I hope if
this is just a one-off thing and then they bring it back up in June, then it's going to be like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, let's hope that we get these little snippets of Rusev every week, because more Rusev in our lives, who can say no to that, right?
Absolutely.
Next, we had Dasha backstage with Becky Lynch talking about Charlotte. Dasha basically wanted to know what Becky thought about the Charlotte situation or something. Like, and the Charlotte situation is basically Charlotte is here. Is there any more to the Charlotte situation other than she asked for a shot at the title and won a match and got a shot at the title? Like, that is the entire situation. Am I missing anything?
No, I think that's about it. Yeah, I mean, she showed up and demanded a title shot and got it.
Yeah, I mean, she did have to win the match against Naomi to actually get a title shot. So it's not like she didn't earn it in some form or fashion. I mean, I guess maybe the other women feel that they're not being afforded that type of opportunity, but Shane even said on Talking Smack last week, you know, she asked for it and you didn't, so that's why she got this title shot. But apparently this situation is so out of hand. This Charlotte is here on SmackDown situation is so out of hand that it requires the committee of Tamina Snuka, Natalia, Carmella, accompanied by James Ellsworth, to come and confront Becky and say, you need to be either with us or you're against us because of this whole Charlotte deal that's going on. And Becky's like, what? Why do I need to join your little group? What is happening? And nothing is really all that accomplished, and they just sort of stare at her, and Ellsworth says something, I think, and they want Becky to join them?
What I loved about this was Becky's reaction was also my reaction.
Just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, what's going on?
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I'm going to go back to eating my dinner now.
Pretty much. Pretty much. Like this, I don't really know what their goal is, because this little crew, I mean, last week their plan, as Kenny and I talked about, was to stare at Charlotte.
Yeah, they had a bigger plan set up for later in the show, though.
They did.
Which so we'll get to.
We will. After that, we had one of the worst no DQ matches I've seen in a while. Randy Orton versus Eric Rowan. David, what do you think about this?
That's just a pile of shit.
It was so bad.
The wife was mentioning, like, she feels really bad for Eric Rowan, right?
I do, because too. I just want to pat him on the head and give him a hug and tell him it'll be okay, but, like, set him free into the wild.
Yeah, he got stuck in no man's land, the knee-jerk reactionary booking that they've done. You know, in hindsight, they should have just kept Bray Wyatt on SmackDown and moved AJ over to Raw like they were going to, instead of swerving the internet. Oh my God, you guys, we got swerved. Can you believe it? Ha! Us stupid wrestling fans that pay to watch this shit. Let's make fun of the paying customer base.
I just feel like a lot of the storytelling on both Raw and SmackDown are suffering right now because they're still trying to carry over stories from before the Superstar shakeup, and nothing can really be accomplished until after Payback, until after the rosters are solidified. It kind of feels like, you know, we've formed these new rosters, but they're not really set yet. Like,
yeah,
they're still sort of gelatinous, and they need to actually be set before anything firm can happen and go forward. And I have no idea why this no DQ match happened. Other than, I guess, they're trying to prove that Randy Orton is maybe ready for a House of Horrors match. The commentators were treating this like it was the biggest deal. They were like, oh my gosh. And like, Eric Rowan went through a table. Props to Eric Rowan for going through a table. He even tried to create drama about going through the table. Bless his heart, when he was like leaning back and then not going through the table and then almost losing his grip, but then not, but then going through the table anyway. Like, bless him. He is doing everything he can. He's not very good, but I love him anyway.
Yeah.
But the commentators, like, when Eric Rowan got a chair at one point, they were like, how is Randy Orton gonna face this? This is gonna be so, oh my gosh, is Randy Orton ready for this? He might not even make it to the House of Horrors match because Eric Rowan tried and failed to use a chair. I'm all for enthusiasm.
I'm just sitting here pinching my nose. I wish you guys could see me, because I'm just pinching the bridge of my nose in utter disgust, trying to figure out what all of this means and why I should care about any of it.
And also, Randy Orton, does he win by nefarious means? Does he win by any sort of violence or dastardly deeds? Or no, RKO. He's done.
Yep. He wins. Yep, just boom, done, out of here.
Gave me WrestleMania flashbacks. Didn't like it.
Yep.
Don't like it at all.
No. Boo!
Boo! Randy Orton!
Boo!
We hate
you. The most stale performer. Here, do you want to talk about guys who are good wrestlers and it's just not enough? The prime fucking example,
Randy Orton. I mean,
Mr. No Personality.
Especially when he doesn't care about something, you can tell. And was it before this match or later on? I don't remember when they had this video package, but we'll just talk about it now because I'm remembering that it happened and I don't remember where it happened. But they had a whole video package about Randy Orton and Bray Wyatt going into the House of Horrors match before Payback. And I think it was later in the show, but whatever. It was more interesting than this match. And Randy Orton's narrating it and he says something like, I don't know what a House of Horrors is, but you know, if it's anything like the last house you brought me to, I'll burn it down just the same. And they're showing Randy Orton doing all these dastardly deeds and doing all of this arson and doing all of these terrible, terrible things, and they still want me to cheer him? He's reminding me of everything he did. He's the worst.
I went on the best Twitter rant against Randy Orton, and I tweet too damn much. Because I can't, there's no way I can possibly bring it up.
But I know which Twitter rant you mean, because Mr. Sandra actually brought it to my attention. Since he started using Twitter, he's just a Twitter fiend or something. And he's like, David was going off about Randy Orton. I was like, really? I haven't been on Twitter all day, but okay. And so then I actually looked it up. But I remember you were saying something about him being boring and a terrible representation of St. Louis, and I don't remember everything else that you said, but...
No one likes him. I know so many independent
other than
wrestlers.
Adam Ferguson.
I'm talking about people who wrestle for a living. So many independent wrestlers, you know, I'll talk to a guy and he'll go, oh man, you know, I've wrestled Austin Aries and he's just the best guy on the planet. He takes care of you. You know, he makes everything look smooth and like $1 million. And oh man, you know, I've wrestled Rob Van Dam. And even though he was smoking weed in the back, he came out and he put on the performance of a lifetime, really knew how to work the crowd. You know, I learned something from him. I really took something away. And then I wrestled Randy Orton. And I go, oh, yeah, how was that? And he goes, just the biggest asshole on the planet. Hard to work with. Never wants to do anything. Lethargic. Lazy. Takes all of his talent for granted. Randy Orton is, and this is my words now, not him. I'm done quoting wrestlers that I've talked to and wrestlers I'm friends with. This is my words right now, you guys. Randy Orton is the biggest waste of talent in the WWE, because he could be so much better than he is. But instead, he is the epitome, the very definition in the Webster's Dictionary of complacent. If you look in the dictionary, a big old picture of Randy Orton's stupid, bald head is just staring right back at you with his dumb tattoos and his very fake tan. It's just the You'd see him. If you showed Randy Orton to a person who knows nothing about wrestling, they would go, wow, that guy looks like a boring wrestler. I'm not interested in seeing him wrestle. And you know what? They're absolutely right. He's a fine worker, but in order to motivate him to do anything that's worthwhile, you practically have to jump over a bridge. It's a lot like Brock Lesnar's work ethic. But Brock can get away with it because he's a beast.
And he just throws people around, and that's the excitement of Brock Lesnar.
He's an attraction. Randy Orton isn't an attraction. You know what Randy Orton would be an attraction at? A VFW hall. That's what Randy Orton would be an attraction in. Not some arena or stadium. So live it up, Randy Orton, while you still can. Because you're really lucky that you didn't have to go to TNA with all your failed drug tests.
Randy Orton is so dull that I found myself mildly intrigued by Jinder Mahal and the Singh brothers beating him up post-match.
Oh, I'm rooting for Jinder Mahal in that match. I mean, I'm rooting for a meteor to hit the arena, but...
Hey, I'm going
to
be there.
Yeah, you'll be there. You'll be there. Never mind. I'm rooting for
Don't wish
meteor.
Death on me.
I'm rooting for a meteor to hit the ring.
Yes, that's a very specifically placed meteor.
It doesn't have to kill him, you guys. But just take the ring out of the equation. That way they can't have the match.
Well, I just hope that it would go on last in that instance, because I really don't want it to prevent me from seeing AJ Styles versus Kevin Owens.
Yeah, it'll probably go on last to prove Vince's point that people will stick around and like anything that he puts out there.
Probably. It's really tempting to actually, like, if it does go on last, just leave.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Or just turn your back to it, open up a newspaper and read that if you're on hard cam. That would be great. I remember in baseball a few years ago, a guy left, it was the Texas Rangers, and he left for their rivals, the Los Angeles Angels. And whenever he came back, the first game back, everybody behind the camera behind home plate, you know, where basically the camera is on while the guy's batting, every single person pulled out a newspaper and started reading the newspaper instead of paying attention to what he was doing at the plate.
That's fantastic.
And it ruined his career. After that, he was never worth anything after that. He completely ruined his career by switching teams. And then they did that. And after that, he was done. He never did anything noteworthy for the remainder of his career after that. How great is that?
That's great. That's fantastic. That's a lot more fantastic.
That's what needs
than
to happen. I wish that newspapers were still in with all the kids today.
Right.
But, you know, everybody.
The kids today are like, what's a newspaper?
Right. Pull out your phone and start texting people or something. But I think it would be better, though, for the visual if it were all newspapers.
Well, that's the thing,
right?
Is a newspaper actually covers your face. So it's exactly. Actually, like, it's a better visual because nobody's watching and you can tell. It's not even just a bunch of bored people. It's like, you have to actually hold up a newspaper.
You're actively not watching.
Yeah. You are actively not watching. I love it. But, exactly. I mean, after the match, after the RKO, we do get Jinder Mahal and the Singh brothers coming out to attack Randy Orton, essentially. Jinder Mahal cuts a promo and it's... Jinder Mahal has kind of the same vocal cadence as Charlotte in a way, actually. And he's just kind of like, you don't like me because I'm different and you don't like my people and I'm going to bring the WWE Championship back to my people, which made me think, like, do you think you've been WWE Champion before?
Also, he said World WWE Championship.
Did he really? I forgot about that.
Yeah. No. He screwed up the name of the title. Oh boy.
Of course.
But he deserves it, you guys. The internet said that he deserves it.
He diets so hard, David. No one works.
Oh, he diets so hard. Nobody diets harder than Hard Body Gender.
Of course not. Now, what I think is interesting, we have a listener. His name is Raul. And I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. I think I am, but I'm not super sure.
I think Raul's cool with it. Raul's good man. Good guy, that Raul.
He is. And he tweeted us. And he said something interesting because Raul's from India. And Raul said, where's the actual tweet? Now I'm looking. Oh, don't you think Jinder Mahal shouldn't speak Punjabi if he can't speak it well? And I was like, yeah. Yeah, that's a fair point, especially when this whole storyline is supposed to be based around him and his people and bringing everything back to India. And in this promo, he says, and now I'm going to speak in my language. Like, it's not really your language if you can't speak it that well, is it? That doesn't make it your language. That makes it a language that, you know, I mean, fair play for even speaking two languages, somewhat. That's admirable, but don't pretend like it's your first language if you can't even speak it that well. Because Raul was like the Bollywood boys speak better Punjabi than him, which is fair enough. Again, like, they're also of Indian descent. They're all Canadians of Indian descent.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was funny because Raul's like, so basically Jinder is the worst Indian to showcase the Indian heritage ever.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny because that's why he was handpicked, is to target that demographic.
Now, my other question about that whole situation, about them trying to, you know, make more waves in India and get more prominence in India and have an Indian star, I get that. It's the same reason they've brought in a lot of Chinese talent into NXT lately, because they're trying to expand their market in China and they're trying to appeal to a worldwide market and that kind of thing. Like, I understand that. I do. Is the best way to appeal to another market to make their guy the heel that everyone is supposed to hate?
The heel that everyone is supposed to hate because he speaks a different language and has a different color skin, that's not my words, that's Jinder's words.
Those are Jinder's words. Jinder's cutting a babyface promo here. He's just scowling while he's doing it.
Yeah, and he has the wrong color of skin, so automatically he's a heel. So it's like, are you shitting me? My other thing with that is I'm fine with them bringing in an Indian guy to become a star. That's great. I think that's a wonderful thing. I think that, building that market over there, I think that's perfect. But maybe don't bring in a jobber who won two matches in the past year.
Well, and that was our biggest problem with it. At least that was my biggest problem with it. It wasn't that it was Jinder Mahal. It was that Jinder Mahal has done nothing but lose recently. And now he's the number one contender for the main championship in your promotion with no build whatsoever. So, I mean, I guess they're kind of counting on the short memories of wrestling fans. And maybe they're hoping that in the next month they can present him as something interesting and present him as someone who, yeah, came out of nowhere, but now is cultivating this stable with the, you know, the former Bollywood boys, the Singh brothers, and becoming more interesting. Honestly, on this episode, it worked a little bit for me. Maybe just because I hate Randy Orton so much and he's so bland that next to Randy Orton, Jinder Mahal was mildly fascinating. I'm not sure. I think Jinder is actually, like, for being given this opportunity, I think Jinder's grabbing the reins and going with it. So I have to say props to him for that. Like, I still don't think he's very good at delivering promos. He's super bland. He I don't know. Like, I don't like any of this storyline. I don't like it being because I'm not from here and I have a different color skin and I'm going to speak a different language. So look at me, I'm a heel and I have more wealth. And there, I mean, at least I guess there's character continuity with Jinder Mahal being rich and whatever. Like, remember when he was married to Kali's sister?
Yeah, but I mean, they kind of forgot about that. And then he was in a band. And, right. Like,
well, you know what? Maybe Jinder Mahal was financing 3MB.
Maybe. You know, I'm just hoping that it'll all be over with after Backlash and he will be relegated to obscurity again, which is probably going to happen. So hold on tight, guys. It's only just a few more weeks until we have while we endure this bullshit. So.
I'm just not excited about a month of this.
No, I'm not excited about this week of this, let alone fucking another month of it. God.
So many more weeks of this. I'm really hoping that something more interesting happens because, and Jinder steals the belt afterwards. That happens.
He steals the belt and then he shows up later on in a stretch Hummer.
Yeah.
Or a stretch Escalade, I believe it was. And, yes.
And the Singh brothers ride away in their limo because they're rich and he stole the belt. And is this how they're, because people were tweeting me about this, is this how they're justifying that the House of Horrors match is non-title? Because I thought they made the match non-title already.
I don't know what they're thinking. I think it's really funny that anyone thinks that they are thinking, Sandra.
There doesn't it's seem obvious, to be that it's much obvious. Thought coming into this.
If you look at everything post-Mania, it's obviously put zero thought into their long-term success for the company.
I really feel like we need to get past Payback and probably past Backlash so that we can actually start forming stories again and having some decent stuff happen. I mean, not everything on this show was terrible, but oh boy,
Better before SummerSlam is how I figure it. So,
and I think I have faith that it will, but I think we're just in kind of a reforming kind of a phase, and oh boy, is it going to be rough for a little while. We got another Lana vignette. She danced around a chair. We talked about that a little bit already. I'm still excited about her joining the women's division because I think the women's division could use more talent. I'm curious to see what she can do. I don't expect her to be very good in the ring. I know she has been working in NXT, but I think there's a place for a character like Lana, now that Eva Marie is gone, the Emelina thing didn't work out. I think there's a place for a character like her. We don't have anyone like her currently on the roster, so I'm curious to see what it brings. I'm not gonna shit on it before it happens, but she is like the most annoying human ever on Total Divas, and it kind of makes me never want to see her ever, so that's a problem. But back from commercial, we see it's the next match in the Beat the Clock Challenge. First, I think we saw Jinder and the Singh brothers drive away in the SUV, but then we have the next match in the Beat the Clock Challenge. It's Breezango versus The Ascension, which seems like a match that you would put first before American Alpha, because you would think, oh, it's just Breezango versus The Ascension. Neither one of them is going to be number one contenders, but lo and behold, Breezango are the number one contenders to the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. Now, I really wish I wouldn't have had this spoiled for me because I would have popped so hard when Breezango won the number one contendership. I would have lost my shit. Like, I love Breezango. I absolutely love them. I'm super stoked that they're number one contenders in the sense that they are one of my favorite tag teams. I love them. I will always love them. They were hilarious on Talking Smack. They made JBL look like a fool on Talking Smack, which I definitely enjoyed. Tyler Breeze was verbally jousting with JBL and winning, which I appreciate quite a lot.
I'm going to have to watch that.
Yeah.
I heard JBL was on it, and I was just like, oh, I have no interest. But
yeah, JBL
now,
was
now
infuriating.
That'll be fun.
It is kind of funny. Becky Lynch at one point asked JBL how he can sleep at night after telling children that they should cheat on their tests, and I don't know, just giving a bunch of other JBL type advice to children, being over the top and whatnot. And Becky Lynch was like, "How do you sleep at night? I'm gonna go to sleep on my cloud of conscience." Because Becky Lynch is a delight. But
yes, she is.
Breezango, number one contenders. The only thing that gives me pause is that I feel like all of the reasons we don't like Jinder Mahal as number one contender to the WWE Championship kind of apply to Breezango being number one contenders to the Tag Team Championships.
Yeah, but the big difference being that does anybody really take the tag team titles on SmackDown that seriously?
I would love to.
Right, but they haven't given us any reason to, so we don't take those seriously. As to where the WWE, the WWF, the WWWF title is being defended against a jobber from Raw.
Yeah. I mean, you're not wrong, but I'm just saying I would love, and I've been aching for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships to mean something, and they never really have in the history of SmackDown. I love Heath Slater and Baby Rhino. I loved when they got the Tag Team Championships. I didn't expect them to hold them very long because I thought, you know, then some, you know, quote-unquote real tag team can take over and we can have a division and it can be great. And I feel like
they held them a lot longer than I thought they would.
Yeah, they did. And then even when American Alpha were champions, they were barely on television. They were always on Main Event or Superstars or whatever. And now we don't even have that show to, like, SmackDown doesn't even have a secondary show right now to advance storylines off air.
And furthermore, the only titles that weren't defended at WrestleMania were the SmackDown Tag Team titles.
Because that's how little they matter, and that's really frustrating to me.
So that's the difference, though. That's why I actually really like this result. As to where the gender thing really bothers me. Why? Because the SmackDown Tag Team titles don't mean anything anyway, so what's it matter?
Yeah, and I mean, in that sense, I'm so excited for Breezango to be the number one contenders because, yay, they're going to get a pay-per-view match and they're amazing. And I hope that
they have a chance to become stars and break out.
Yeah, and I really hope that they do. I really hope that, you know, they're finally going to get a chance to wrestle for more than 2 minutes, which I don't know how long this Beat the Clock challenge. It was like, it was 2:36. This match was 2:36, which is fine because it was against the Ascension and no one really cares. But
you know what's great, though? You know another reason why this is okay and the gender thing isn't? It's not built on racism.
That's an excellent point. That is an excellent point. It's built on fashion and good looks and selfies and
comedy.
Comedy who doesn't like a good strippers. Life? And I love Breezango so much. So the fashion police as number one contenders, I don't want to be down on it. I don't want to sound like I'm down on it. I think I just like, it gave me pause because I was like, oh, a lot of the arguments I can totally apply here. And I'm still kind of torn between American Alpha and Breezango too. But I'm really glad that Tyler Breeze and Fandango are going to get the chance to have a pay-per-view match. I really hope that they're given time to show what they can do and actually kind of wow people and remind people like, yeah, actually, we're really good wrestlers. So let's go with that and actually have us be characters again, because that's something that we need, right? Like, we need the lower card to matter as well. We need everyone to be interesting and to have stories. And that's kind of what I'm hoping comes from this, I guess. So yay, Breezango.
You can thank Southpaw Wrestling for that.
Yes. Yeah, true. I didn't even think about that because I see Breezango as incredibly talented and deserving of opportunities regardless of their incredible performances on Southpaw Regional Wrestling. But Mr. McElroy and Chet Cheddarfield, number one contenders to the SmackDown Tag Team Championships.
Well played, boys. Well played.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Oh, I think the House of Horrors promo that I was talking about before with Randy Orton being a despicable cretin of a human being came up next. And then Renee was backstage with Naomi. She interviewed Naomi about the title match tonight. And Naomi, you know, talked about how good Charlotte is, but she doesn't like how Charlotte was trash talking her. She doesn't like how Charlotte's talking behind her back. And Naomi says that, you know, she's going to do her thing like she always does. And she's going to prove why she's the champion right now, because, you know, she has successfully won the championship twice now. Actually, she's a 2-time champion. And, you know, she, of course, says that Charlotte is about to feel the glow. It was kind of a standard Naomi promo, not that much to talk about. But then we got the actual women's match, Charlotte Flair versus Naomi. And I enjoyed this match for what it was. It wasn't super long, but it wasn't like a 5-minute beat the clock endeavor. So I appreciated that. And I think Naomi is still kind of coming along in the ring, but I'm still seeing improvement from her. And I liked what she did with Charlotte. I thought this was pretty fun. And I don't know. Like, I was into it, and I didn't know the result of this going into it. So when the DQ happened, when Talia and Tamina and Carmella and Ellsworth, of course, came out and attacked because they have this vendetta against Charlotte, apparently, I was like, damn it, I was kind of enjoying the match, and I really wanted to see what happened.
It was a fun match. It wasn't anything to write home about, I don't think.
It's not something I'm going to go back and rewatch loads of times.
Right. And like a lot of Naomi's offense, you could tell that it just kind of looked awkward here. I don't know if Charlotte knows how to take that kind of offense just yet.
Naomi's very different to a lot of them. And Naomi and Charlotte, this is something that I think is worth pointing out. Charlotte has worked with Becky loads of times. Charlotte has worked with Alexa in NXT, not necessarily on television, but they work together in NXT plenty. Charlotte has worked with Bayley plenty. Charlotte has worked with Sasha plenty. Those women haven't worked with Naomi because Naomi was stuck floundering on the main roster dancing as a Funkadactyl. So,
no doubt.
You know, like, they might have to establish chemistry a little bit more. And I think it's coming along. And I think Naomi's just, she wrestles a very different style. She actually reminds me more of, like, Lita than any of the other women do, just in the sense that she jumps off things and she flies and she does, you know, more high-flying offense, I guess, is what she's doing. Which she's not necessarily very technically great, because I don't think Lita was very, like, technically great, but I think she's charismatic and she springboards and... She does a
lot of athletic stuff.
She's very athletic. Yeah. And I think that's finally starting to be a talking point that doesn't annoy me as much, because she's translating being athletic into having offense and doing matches instead of just, look how athletic Naomi is, and her matches were dog shit.
Right. Exactly. And I feel like this is something that my only fear, though, is like by the time they figure all this out, they may be moving on to another program.
Well, probably.
Right. And the ending to this was really stupid, by the way, but I mean, it is what it is. I don't think Charlotte should have outright won the title anyway, but it's kind of weird to me that they're sort of positioning Charlotte as a tweener or a babyface with the way that she was working here and the way she got robbed out of the match.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And especially because there aren't that many women in the women's division. So I'm kind of curious, and I'm sorry that it's like thundering out right now. I don't know if you can hear that, but...
It's thundering here too. Okay. We have bad storms, so yeah.
Like, it just kind of started. I was like, that's rumbling very loudly. But
yes.
I actually didn't mind the ending here. I thought it was kind of fun. I don't really get the whole alliance against Charlotte, but at least the women have come together in an alliance on their own against a common enemy. This is not like Team Bad, Team PCB, Team whatever the other team was. There was another one.
Right.
Oh, Bella. It was the Bella team. That's right. But... So I like that they're coming together, that we kind of know what their motivations are, I guess. I don't know why Carmella and Natalia are working together so much right now, because they seem to have issues for a while, and now they seem to just be over that.
Yeah.
I guess, which doesn't... Like, I kind of want to know how that all got resolved. But I'm kind of into the story. I guess they seem to be positioning Charlotte as kind of a babyface, which... If that's the way they want to go with it, fine. I'm almost wondering if they're positioning it so that she has to ally herself with Becky Lynch, because on Talking Smack, they had Becky talk about like her friendship with Charlotte. And also Becky said, you know, she's a great friend and she's also one of my greatest rivals. She's one of my favorites to face in the ring. And, you know, they've had their fights too. So I'm wondering if we're going to have a short-term alliance with Becky Lynch and Charlotte, and then that could break apart and be the next big program potentially, which I would be all about, because
it's all leading to Becky Lynch and Charlotte eventually. I see Charlotte taking the title from Naomi, and then that's where it would go, probably for one of the big pay-per-views in the year, as opposed to just a throwaway pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
So Charlotte may have a standby opponent until, you know, say SummerSlam or something of that nature or that ilk.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it does make me intrigued where it's going to go, and if this alliance with the three, with Carmella, Tamina, and Natalia, if it's going to go somewhere. It did occur to me just as I was watching it. It was like, every woman in the segment except for Naomi is second generation or third generation. So that's kind of interesting. Like, the SmackDown women's roster is actually fairly generational.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is. And it's kind of fun that way, too.
I think it'd be a fun thing to bring up, actually, like all the women in their alliance. Like, yeah, well, we saw our parents wrestle because Carmella's dad. I don't know, like, if people haven't seen interviews with Carmella, her dad was actually a wrestler. I can't remember what his name was or what he worked as. He was a jobber, basically, but he did work for WWE.
Yeah, he was an enhancement guy.
Yeah.
Sure enough. And like that's something though that we say it would be great for them to bring up, but you know, once they mentioned it, it would be all they talked about.
yeah. Good point. They probably wouldn't stop bringing it up ever.
Right. It'd be the only point of conversation.
And it would become their only characteristic was...
It would.
Hey, guess what? Our dads did stuff. Or in the case of Natalia, they probably wouldn't even mention her dad.
Yeah.
Remember my uncle, the wrestler, and let's forget all about my father, also the wrestler?
Yeah. I saw old Jim the Anvil at WrestleCon, and he looked a little... he looked like he had high blood pressure, is all I'll say.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And the Neidhartts are one of my very favorite parts of Total Divas. I'm not going to lie. Like, they are bonkers, and I kind of love
them. That's what I've heard.
It comes through. But, I mean, all of this just kind of makes me wonder where the women's division is going, and I like that everyone's being featured, so that's pretty cool. But I don't know, David, so that was SmackDown. Any final closing thoughts on this week's episode?
It was bad, just like Randy Orton. You guys, boo!
I don't know. Do you want to rate this episode? I don't rate episodes. We don't usually do that on the SmackDown summary. I'm actually going to give this... it's probably a thumbs down, but kind of middle to down, because I didn't hate everything, and I'm excited about Breezango, but still kind of bad episode. Probably a thumbs down for me.
I will do the Kenny McIntosh view and my own view. I would give this episode a 4 out of 10, a good old Bret Hart enthusiastic 4 out of 10. It was the second worst episode of SmackDown of the year, and Randy Orton sucks still. And
So are you counting the episode of SmackDown right after the draft? Are you saying that that's only the third worst episode of SmackDown?
Or
are you saying of 2017?
No, of the year.
Okay.
So since the rollover, no, this was bad though. This was not good. Last week, it's still a major improvement over last week, which I would have given a 1 out of 10.
Legitimately
one of the worst wrestling programs I have seen since WCW era Vince Russo.
Wow.
So Vince Russo era WCW. So it's been like practically 2 decades since I saw a wrestling show that bad from last week. But like 4 out of 10 for me. Kenny would definitely give this one a thumbs down. I think that's a safe assumption.
I think it's a pretty safe assumption. I didn't hate it as much as I think a lot of people did, but beat the clock challenge for fuck's sake.
When a show is downhill, whenever the first guy comes out from his entrance, like that's the high mark of the show, you know it's going to be a bad show.
I mean, I still enjoyed the women's match. I think because it ended on a thing that I was intrigued by, I was like, oh, maybe it wasn't so bad. But yeah, I don't know.
You know me. I don't like shenanigans.
You
like
don't.
This.
That's true. See, I love shenanigans. I got excited about the shenanigans.
I only like shenanigans whenever it has like a big impact. Like WrestleMania shenanigans tend to be kind of fun sometimes, but something like this. I don't know. Any shenanigans involving Tamina Snuka just doesn't grab me.
That's a fair enough point. David, where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at ZoopSoul, that's ZOOPSOUL. I am great, not as great as Sandra, though. Sandra, what is your Twitter?
Oh, well, thank you, darling. I am on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Also follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. A new classic ITR just went up today, the April 26, 2012 episode. I haven't listened to it, so I have no idea what they discuss, but I do know that they were joined by Paul Orndorff and Shane Douglas. I'm actually probably listening listening to that tonight, because I do like listening along with Classic ITR as I post them. I just haven't had time yet. All sorts of other stuff on Patreon. David and Kenny will be back this weekend or Monday or whenever to discuss Payback after that happens. So we'll find out what the House of Horrors is and how horrible it is. And we'll see how all that goes. I think it's just going to be horrible in a way that they don't intend it to be horrible, but whatever, we will see what's in store.
Yeah,
but
we will. And something else too that I'd like to bring up, I was reading around and noticed that there is an update on Katsuyori Shibata's injury.
Oh.
In New Japan Pro Wrestling, and it's looking like it's not going to be very good, you guys. He ended up headbutting, direct head-to-head contact with Okada in the main event, and it was really bad. I've seen the video of it. I don't recommend anyone see the video of it. He was diagnosed with a subdermal hematoma, and his brain is still bleeding. He is still paralyzed in his right side.
Oh, is he really?
So his career is likely over.
I'm glad he's alive.
They are remaining optimistic that he'll recover from it, but in terms of his career, it's looking pretty damn bad. I've seen the video of it. It's really bad. I don't recommend seeing it. He starts bleeding from the head immediately after the headbutt. And guys, I know occasionally we get some guys that wrestle that listen to this. I swear to God, man, just please, no matter what you do, please drop the headbutt. It's useless. You don't need to be doing it. I've heard people go, that's bullshit. It's perfectly fine. No, you guys, due to all the headbutts, you look at the people whose careers and lives that the headbutt has ruined. You know, Jimmy Snuka after the coconut to the head, any type of head trauma, we need to lay off of that, man. And of course, the Chris Benoit headbutts, and we won't even go there. But
Daniel Bryan,
that's exactly where I was going next. Daniel Bryan ended up having his career shortened, and I will say, Shibata is very, very lucky that he ended his own career as opposed to the career of Okada, who New Japan Pro Wrestling has sunk so much money into. Okada is essentially the New Japan version of Roman Reigns. He's the new guy. He has the keys to the kingdom. He's going to be their top guy for the next 20 years. And so imagine if he would have injured him to the point where he was paralyzed in his right side, as opposed to what actually happened. And it's utterly tragic, because Katsuyori Shibata was one of my favorite guys to watch. He is one of the toughest guys in New Japan, therefore one of the toughest guys in the world. And we've lost an incredible, incredible talent in the wrestling industry due to headbutts. And you can't predict exactly how they're going to affect you. Every blow to the head is different. I got into a car accident and my best friend got a concussion from her head bouncing off of the padded car seat, you guys. So every type of head trauma is entirely different, and they're not all created equal. So even a quote unquote safe headbutt can still do long-term damage. And I think as wrestling fans, we appreciate these men and women, but we care about them more as people, and
we
don't
want
to see them
able to keep wrestling and also keep having lives.
Exactly. Here's the thing, Sandra. Eventually, they have to hang up the boots. They have to unlace the boots and leave them in the ring like The Undertaker did and walk out the door. And whenever they walk out the door, I want them to go home to a loved one or go home to their kids and not have any type of brain trauma or any type of memory loss or anything of that sort. I want them to live rich, healthy lives after they're done wrestling. And I don't think that's possible without getting rid of the headbutt. So guys, if you work and you're using a headbutt, please just try to find an alternative. There's so many great wrestling moves. There's thousands of excellent wrestling moves that you can add to your repertoire. And imagine, it's a lot like dieting, right? You know, cut out on that stuff just the way that you would cut out on the red meat and the cheeseburgers and the pizza and blah, blah, blah. And you're going to live longer. You're going to be healthier. You're going to be happier. And at the end of the day, we care about all these performers and we want to see them, even the ones that we don't like. I want to see Roman Reigns live to be a old man who's very healthy and very happy with his daughter and hopefully some grandkids one day.
I agree. And I think the headbutt, I agree with you on the whole headbutt situation. Yeah. I don't really have anything more to say other than that. It just seems like an unnecessary risk for a move that
it is.
Is like
You can accomplish the same thing with a lariat, but
you can accomplish the same thing with other less risky maneuvers. And so
yes, you can.
I think minimizing the risk and that type of thing. I mean, wrestling is always going to be really risky. So I understand the people that say, well, I mean, nothing's really safe, right? Like, nothing's really going to be that safe. It's not. But if you can minimize the risk, then why not minimize it and go and have a happy life?
Exactly. At the end of the day, we want these guys and gals to live long, rich, fulfilling lives. And anything that we can do as fans to go, hey, I don't want to see that stuff anymore, because I want to see these guys. At the end of the day, they are theater performers, right? If you boil it all down, that's what they are. And I don't want to see these guys in wheelchairs or unable to use the right side of their body. That's horrible. Oh my God. I can't, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy, let alone guys that I pay to watch and get emotionally invested in. So, and I use the term guys as guys and gals, not just being a blanket term. So we want to see these people as healthy, happy, old gentlemen and ladies. And let's keep it that way. Let's do everything we can as fans to openly reject moves that could injure someone or hurt someone. No more steel chairs to the head. No more headbutts. Get rid of that stuff.
Steel chairs to the head. I mean, watching Retro Raw, whenever I see those, it just makes me cringe so much. I don't like it. I want the wrestlers to be able to live happy and healthy lives, and we've seen some pretty adverse effects from stuff like that. So
I just read Pete Gass's book, which I recommend. It's a pretty good book, co-written by my good pal John Robinson, who I worked with for about 10 years. And He's talking about how now he has memory loss from all the chair shots, and he's such a smart guy, and he's an intelligent dude. He's so well spoken. It's just a shame to see that stuff. And you know, whenever we were hanging out with Mick Foley, and we took pictures with Mick, he's like, "Hey, I gotta cock my head to the side because with all the concussions I've had, my brain has a funny reaction whenever I see the flash of a camera."
Yeah,
and I'm like, man, that's just. It's gutting. It's
That's
gutting
the
to
kind
see
of stuff
these people.
That now that we know the effects of brain damage, I hope that people will take steps to minimize the effects of brain damage with the knowledge that we have. Unfortunately, you know, back when Mick Foley was wrestling, we didn't know the adverse effects of everything like that. But I think it's an important discussion for sure.
Yeah. No, it definitely sucks. And New Japan has lost one of their top stars. Dave Meltzer said it. He was going to be a top five guy in New Japan for several years to come. And now he's gone. And that just blows. There's no other way to put it. He was young. He was really, really good looking. Just a handsome guy. And man, he had everything in front of him. And I really hope it's not the last that we've seen of him. But if the alternative is him not walking ever again, then damn it, I hope it is the last we've seen of him in wrestling.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't want to see him return to the ring and potentially cause more damage and...
No,
that's not. No. But on that note, but no, I'm glad that you brought it up, even though it's not necessarily good news, because it is important to talk about. Definitely.
It's something that we need to address as fans, that we can't tolerate these guys that we really care about one way or the other, really hate or really love. We can't tolerate these guys doing that kind of stuff to themselves now that we know the risks.
No. It's not.
They're human beings, you guys. They're human beings.
They are. They're actual human people.
They are not crash test dummies. They're real people. So.
And we love them, and we want to, you know, see them continue to be able to wrestle and live and have happy lives. So, yeah, on that note, I guess that's it for the SmackDown summary. So thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you soon.
Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Look, everyone, it's Tyler!
super good looking. Every hair in place, everyone loves this gorgeous face. You can't deny my beauty shot on everything that you are not.